You're listening to The Exchange on Siouxland Public Media. I'm Mary Hartnett. On July 20th, 1969, American astronauts Neil Armstrong and Edwin Buzz Aldrin became the first humans ever to land on the moon. About 6.5 hours later, Armstrong became the first person to walk on the moon.
It's one small step for man, one
The Apollo 11 mission occurred 8 years after President John F. Kennedy announced a national goal of landing a man on the moon by the end of the 1960s. Apollo 17, the final manned moon mission, took place in 1972. This Saturday night, people all over the world will commemorate the moon landing. Here in Siouxland, there are several special programs that will illuminate and educate you about the event. First, though, we talk with a teacher and scientist well-known to Siouxland residents, especially since his many programs a few years ago about the solar eclipse. Wayne State College professor of physics and astronomy Todd Young is the director of the Fred G. Dale Planetarium at Wayne State. Young creates and presents a multitude of programs about astronomy at the planetarium. This Saturday, to celebrate the 50th anniversary of the moon landing, Young will present the program Apollo 11, Man's First Steps on the Moon, and One Small Step, Apollo 11, and the Future of Space Exploration. I talked with Todd Young about the importance of that moon landing a half a century ago.
This is one of those moments in history where I think if you're old enough to have watched it on TV and you can remember it, you know, you remember the day, you remember where you were, you know, and it's one of those and it's what's even more great is that it's one of those positive things. You know, usually you remember where you were with the negative ones, you know, 9/11 and the assassination of President Kennedy and stuff like that. But here was, you know, this is just mankind venturing, you know, out into an unknown, you know, and everybody's on the edge of their seat, and it's not a Netflix show. I mean, this was real life, and this was real dangers, you know, being presented live to everybody across the world, you know, and I mean, it was just an amazing thing, you know, and for it to happen without disaster, I mean, all the better, you know, but this event, I think, really sparked a lot of people to get into astronomy and science and start to think of themselves, you know, on a planet that's in a solar system, that's in a galaxy, you know, so that we're both, you know, it reminds us our place in the universe, but it also reminds us about how marvelous we are and that we can be even begin to venture and think about what's going on out there, you know, and we really need that to continue because we get so much out of making ourselves think like that and go there, you know, and, you know, and so I'm hoping that this 50th anniversary kind of reignites a spark to maybe going back to the moon and then, of course, continuing forward with all plans of going to Mars. You know, because it's really when you put yourself out there in those dangerous situations that, you know, that's the mother of invention, as it were. You know, how are we going to survive? How could we possibly thrive? You know, how could we do this? How could we do that? You know, and in figuring that out and experiencing those experiences is where we do a lot of learning, a lot of growing, you know, across the world.
Do you think that some people feel today, from what I've heard, that the space program, space travel, all of that takes money away from other scientific needs? And they say, well, what do we get? What did we get out of the moon landing?
Well, then I guess my first thing to just say, I would say, is, well, go to whatever search engine you want to use and type in benefits of space exploration, and they'll get their answer right there. The cell phones that everybody has right now, athletic shoes, baby food, really computers, GPS systems, all of these can be traced back to space exploration. I mean, all of these came out of the necessity of, well, how are we going to feed these astronauts? Speaking of baby food, how are we going to feed these astronauts when we have so limited space, right? And there's like really no refrigerator, you know, that they can just open up, you know. that kind of thing, you know. So, I mean, there's so many technological and scientific benefits from trying to figure out how to, like I said, survive, thrive, and go someplace that's off Earth, and so someplace like that, that we reap those benefits, but we, at this point, a lot of people have forgotten. Without that trip to the moon and without that space race, we would probably be technologically, decades behind where we are right now.
So it really pushed people because they had to come up with answers. They had to fix these problems.
Yes. Absolutely. We had that there was that horrible disaster with Apollo 11. I'm sorry, not Apollo 11, Apollo 1. And then even with the space shuttle disasters, they are disasters. We honor their courage, but we learn, right? And we learn from those mistakes, and that's where we progress even further. I mean, it's a dangerous thing, but yet we still have a spirit to say, well, we're going to learn from this, and we're going to rebuild, and we're going to do this again, and we really need to keep doing that. If we get too complacent, then we really begin to stagnate as a society, technologically and otherwise. Continuing to reach out is really the best thing that we can do.
I know here at the Planetarium you've had a lot of interest in recent years and in events, and you did a lot of shows and programs when the eclipse happened a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. It does seem like people are always interested in these things, whether it's an eclipse or a manned mission to space, to the moon, to Mars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that, astronomy in these, yeah, it's like, you're right. It's usually a not too hard of a sell, as it were, when these kind of things come up, because I think just about everybody, there's no better view than a really good, clear, dark night sky. That's where, with today's cell phones and distractions and so forth, you put someone out in a field with a good dark sky, night sky, and they will be in awe, about everything that they can see, and it helps bring people back to remembering that they're on a planet in a wondrous universe, and that there's a lot of mystery that is yet to be solved in that universe, and it gets them thinking about all the stuff that we've done before and what could still be done, and it sparks their curiosities, and then hopefully they come to the Planetarium and learn more, and again, usually when these bigger events like this happen, they actually move on those curiosities and come visit, and I can help them out.
You were not born at the time of the moon landing, correct?
Well, no, I do have sort of a cosmic connection to all of this in that I was actually born on July 16th, 69, the day they blasted off for the moon. So technically I did watch the moon landing, but I don't remember it. So,
how early was it you became really fascinated with astronomy and space?
Well, I did happen to grow up in a sort of a rural hobby ranch in Minnesota, and so that helped. I got to some good dark skies, and then also my dad, he liked to take us camping, and that was sometimes summer and sometimes winter camping. He really liked to go winter camping, and of course the winter time is the astronomer season, so good, crisp, long dark nights, and he knew the constellations fairly well. And so we would spend, quite a bit of time around the campfire and then looking up at the constellations. So that really, just like with all kids, that's awesome, to do that with your dad and to learn about the stars. And then later on, but then as I got older, I had a really good physics teacher in high school that got me kind of really hooked on science. And then I went through my undergraduate doing more physics, but then it was when I took an astrophysics class for graduate school that it steered me back towards, you know, this is where I really want to specialize. I really love this stuff, you know, and then I did my doctorate in astrophysics at Lincoln, you know, and then from there I came right to here, you know, and then so I've been teaching physics and astronomy here at Wayne State ever since, you know, and then I was lucky enough to be put in charge of the planetarium in 2009, and it's been great. I couldn't have wished for anything better to happen.
So what are you going to be doing on the 20th?
On the 20th, I do have some shows. I have a really great planetarium show called Apollo 11, Man's First Step on the Moon. We're going to be doing that, showing that at 1 and 2 and 7 and 8. And then also on that same day, I've actually been giving a sort of an interactive talk about this mission across Nebraska this summer called One Small Step. And I'm going to give that talk here in the planetarium as well at 3 and 4 for anybody who would like to listen to that.
That was Wayne State College Professor of Physics and Astronomy Todd Young, who is the director of the Fred G. Dale Planetarium. This Saturday, on the 50th anniversary of the Apollo 11 moon landing, Young will present two programs, Apollo 11, Man's First Steps on the Moon, and One Small Step, Apollo 11, and the Future of Space Exploration. Programs are free and open to the public. You're listening to The Exchange. I'm Mary Hartnett. Today we are remembering the moon landing 50 years ago. The moon landing is the focus at the Cherokee Museum and Planetarium for the rest of this month. Linda Burkhart, director of the Cherokee Museum and Planetarium, says one of those programs begins today.
First, we have our public planetarium programs, and we always have those on Wednesdays and Sundays at 4 o'clock. Every month we have a different theme. This month it's The Eagle Has Landed, and it's all about the Apollo 11 moon landing. So the program begins with a close-up of the moon. We talk about the moon, and then we have several original recordings of when we, first of all, with President Kennedy's speech about the challenge to go to the moon, and then we talk about, and then we put the original recordings of when Neil Armstrong got to the moon, when the rocket took off, things like that are in the planetarium program as well. And then we talk about what they did when they got there, what they left on the surface of the moon, so, and then just the Apollo program in general. Also, this coming weekend, just on Saturday and Sunday of this coming weekend, at 3 o'clock, we'll be doing a special planetarium program. It's a full dome feature, and it'll be about a half an hour long, and it is called The Dawn of the Space Age, and it's just a history of our space program, and we'll be doing that on Saturday at 3 and Sunday again at 1 o'clock. So we'll have a 3 o'clock program on Saturday, a 1 o'clock program on Sunday, and then again our public planetarium on Sunday afternoon at 4. All of these are free and open to the public.
Have you had a lot of interest in these programs, people being wanting to come?
Oh, we certainly have. We've been doing, if we get full with our first program, we always do a second. And we've done a couple different second programs this month, and we've certainly had full planetariums for every one of our programs this month. Everyone's interested in the moon landing program.
I know you did a lot of programs a few years ago when the eclipse was going on, when we were getting ready for that.
Yes, the solar eclipse?
Yeah.
Absolutely, yes. And then we had the event out in front of the museum as well during the solar eclipse. So, yes, that was a lot of fun, too. I love it when the public gets interested in things.
Yeah, that was pretty great. That was pretty cool with everyone with their eclipse glasses. And I know here, you know, out here at Western Iowa Tech, although, you know, it wasn't the full effect of it, we were all standing out there on the big lawns with our glasses on. It was amazing to see.
Oh, it was. And some of our staff did go down to Missouri and watch the full solar eclipse. And then some of them were here and helped the public see the partial one here in Iowa. So, yep, it was quite a day. And when you get an opportunity to see something like that, you want to make sure that you do take that opportunity.
I hear you have an amazing new projector up there.
We do. We do. We used to have a Spitz A1, which was just a fine projector for looking at constellations and talking about what you can see in the night sky. But now we have a digital. It's a Spitz 2400. So it's incredible. It has three different softwares, one for the human body, one for the planet Earth, and one for astronomy. And then we are able to program all kind of things into it so that and bring things in from the internet. So it's just exciting what we can do now. And we have during this moon landing program, the Eagle has landed. We fly to the moon from the launch pad where Apollo 11 took off, and then you get the feeling of flying up into space, and then we go and land on the surface of the moon, and then we're surrounded by a moonscape, and then we go travel and we fly by the moon so we can see a close-up of the moon, and then we fly away from it, and it's just fabulous what we can do.
Are you getting, are people talking a lot about their interest in the moon landing and up there talking about those that remember it, what it was like?
Yes, that's what I was just going to say. There's a lot of people that remember it, and there's a lot of people that just want to know more about it because they didn't experience it. But those that remember it, remember it well, and they all, and certainly I remember it. My son was about 3 months old, and we stayed up during the night and watched all the events on TV, and it was just so exciting, and it was one of those times when the whole world was watching, but this particular country was so excited of our accomplishment, and I think we really felt united in that particular time in our history.
That was Linda Burkhart, the director of the Cherokee Museum and Planetarium. The Planetarium is hosting a special program through July 28th called The Eagle Has Landed that tells the story of the Apollo 11 moon landing on July 20th, 1969. The program is being held today and Sunday at 4 p.m. You're listening to The Exchange on Siouxland Public Media, and we are remembering the first moon landing this week, 50 years ago. As we remember that anniversary, Siouxland Public Media helped produce a special segment with members of Girls Inc. Throughout the summer, a group of young ladies learn about reporting and radio through our Siouxland Public Media Lab. Three of those girls spent time at the Center for Active Generations in Siouxland to talk to seniors as they remember and reflect on this half-century milestone.
3, 2, 1.
Hi, I'm Adeline.
I'm Abby. And I'm Kaya.
And we're from Girls Inc.
And we're exploring the 50th anniversary of the moon landing.
Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
Well, you have to tell me what year the moon landing happened. I can't remember the day.
1969.
Nails is Houston, Roger out.
My name is Linda Lee Diebler. And I was born in 1939.
What do you remember about that day?
That day. I loved history, and I thought that was wonderful that we landed on the moon, that Neil Armstrong was such a brave man to do that. How many people, men or women, would be brave enough to take that step? because they didn't know if they were going to come back or not.
That's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
My name is Dolores Disterhoff. I was early 20s, and I probably was working on my farm in Minnesota.
Can you describe what you saw and the impact the event made on you?
That's a hard question to answer. I guess my whole thought was, why are we really exploring the moon? Do we really need that? Are we ever going to put human beings up there to live? And is it just a waste of our money? I guess I was just amazed that technology was so great that it could get a big thing like that up in the air. And also, I was just a little worried that maybe they wouldn't come back either. I think a lot of people were worried about that.
Here, men from the planet Earth, first set foot upon the moon, July 1969.
How old were you when the moon landing happened?
I was, at that time, about 21 years old. My name is Bob Steffi. I live here in Sioux City. I've been here for most of my life.
What do you remember about that day?
I do remember the excitement that it caused. Everyone was jubilant in the fact that we were experimenting mostly in a journey that was going to be far, far from the Earth, and I guess we were just excited about the whole thing. Actual event, of course, was televised, and that's what we were watching. As the journey progressed, we all got more and more excited as far as it getting closer and closer to the moon, and when, you know, it actually landed, it was kind of a cloud of dust, and you could see the parachute on coming, opening on its way down, and the capsule was intact. It wasn't in pieces, you know, so we knew that it was successful.
Although the surface appears to be very, very fine-grained as you get close to it, it's almost like a powder.
Do you think more should be done when it comes to exploring outer space?
No. I'm sorry, I don't. I think more should be done to be for the cure of diseases like cancer. I would prefer money spent there.
I like progress. At first I wasn't for it. I thought it was a waste of money, but we need to keep on pushing on and progressing farther and farther with all this.
I think space exploration is a good thing, and I think that at some point, in my opinion only, the Earth will probably wear out and we'll need a new habitat, so I think it's a good thing.
Well, for thousands of years now, it's been man's dream to walk on the moon. Right now, after seeing it happen, knowing that it happened, it still seems like a dream.
Can you believe it's been 50 years since the moon landing?
No, because my last birthday when I turned 70, I couldn't believe I was 70 either. So.
You know, I'm 79 years old. It's hard for me to remember way back then. 69, that's a long time ago. I wish I'd been a history teacher.
Anything else you would like to say?
No, but I appreciate your interview. I think education is one of the most important things that you can do, and especially at your ages, because you're our future, you're what we look forward to.
That was 14-year-old Adeline and Abigail and Kaya, who are 12 years old. They're members of Girls Inc. and the Media Lab project at Siouxland Public Media. Special thanks to Siouxland Public Media's Sheila Brummer for producing the interviews with seniors at the Center for Active Generations in Sioux City. Well, I remember the moon landing. I was 6 years old on July 20th, 1969. It was hot and humid and very quiet, and we all sat around the black and white TV and watched something amazing. Local historian Russ Gifford watched it as well. Gifford says those early days of the 1960s were really all about expanding communication technologies and our reach in space. Gifford says satellites were already making a global community possible back in 1964.
you know, in 64, I think, we got to watch the Olympics live for the first time because we had these satellites.
Right.
And later, you know, going to the moon, they realized people needed to be part of this. So they were like, oh, okay. And they started coming up with these, you know, we can't do these big cameras with film. And we already had videotape, but videotape was huge. Well, let's put them together. Let's make that smaller. We'll make these Plumicon tubes and things like that. And thus we started watching. And the very first time on the, I think it was the 68 trip out to the moon, they're holding up cards, sign cards to communicate with us. Well, by the next time, then we got communications as well as video. Of course, it was black and white. But just watching the moon landing, you know, after you've had 6 or 8 years of this, where every show is about the advancement, every book. I mean, I remember as a kid reading books on how we were going to get there. We were going to create a space station out in you know, Earth orbit, and we'd build the thing there, because the idea of building a rocket that could push you that far, this what would become the Saturn V, was just, let's face it, at the time of Sputnik, there were a lot of American scientists that would have told you you could not have gotten a bowling ball to orbit. There is no way. That would be the max. And then all of a sudden Sputnik comes along, and our competitive juices kicked in, you know, and it took us a year, but that's when we get Explorer. That's when we're finally getting up there. Of course, we launches that would lift off a little bit and then fall back to Earth and blow up, and we'd watch them, you know, we'd get to see those. But it was just an intense time of change. You know, Walter Cronkite had a show every Sunday, you know something like Toward the 21st Century or something like that, and he would show you all these things, and I would think back and think, I saw something like that with Cronkite. And we talk about the idea that everybody would someday have a computer on their desk. You know, you have...
Because they're as big as a room at that time.
At the very least, think about this. You know, the Sage building out by the airport was a computer. I mean, that was, a building just designed to hold a huge computer. These things, you know, had vacuum tubes bigger than the computers we have today. I mean, one of those vacuum tubes that was necessary, and they needed zillions of them, that's what put out so much heat, was bigger than your cell phone in height, even the bigger cell phones today. I mean, these things were huge, and they were so, but think about this. It was trying to get to the moon that got us to develop the IC chip. A combination of a resistor and an integrated circuit to create the ability to come up with a navigation program to get us to the moon.
You know, speaking of going to the moon, I remember watching this mm-hmm. in the dark on a very hot, just very hot, humid July evening with my family in front of the TV. Black and white TV, and everyone sitting there all over the country, all over the world.
All of us together.
And it was like sitting, I don't know if this was your feeling, I was just a kid, but it was like watching in awe and silence, and everybody knew everyone was watching it at the same time.
Yeah. And, you know, and you couldn't hardly see anything. You know, the pictures... You know, the networks had a picture on the big screen that was in mission control. So the contrast to start with was exceedingly high. So it was hard to even make, you know, and our televisions back then were pitiful compared to today. And, you know, so you're watching, and as you say, I'm thinking the landing was mid-afternoon for us. And he didn't step out until late that night. And as you say, it was a hot day, a sticky day. And you're watching, trying to see it.
Yeah.
But we were there to experience it. We saw it. Just the entire progress. And for people my age, you know, we had watched every flight. I mean, I started watching with the early Mercury programs, and I mean, they were just, that was a big deal. And it formed a lot of what I wanted to do with my life. I mean, the whole concept of scientist must be the most incredible person in the world, you know, and working with all these complex figures. And, you know, heck, I wouldn't have a job today if they hadn't created the smaller computers. You know, I mean, it's an amazing concept to realize how much this changed everything.
You know, and now people talk about going back into space and doing more. A lot of people have said to me just recently, why would we even have a space program? Why would we even go out there? Think of all the money it's going to cost and all these problems we have down here on Earth. Isn't that a waste of our time and our money?
Isn't it funny? Because those were the same arguments that the same people were making at the same time back then. You
right.
heard that all the time. And I can't remember who said it first, but the one that was brilliant was, I don't know how to tell you this, not $1 was spent in outer space. It was spent in Huntsville, Alabama. It was spent in Houston. It was spent in the United States building these spacecraft, building these computers, building all these pieces, and that money was flowing through. At the height of the space program, at the very height of it, it was 4% of the national budget. That is a huge amount, and that's probably, I'm just guessing, probably 100 times what it is now. You know, I think if it's 0.4% now, we're lucky. The reality is that was a boon for all the people here. And in some ways, it had some part in creating that middle class, upper middle class, because these were a professional level of jobs. And I will tell you, when I got out of college, one of the problems was the space program was winding down. And suddenly you had PhDs out on the street, you know, and you're like, oh, yeah, they got 13 years of experience working in the space program, and you're going, hey, you know, this math degree is going to be big. So the reality is it made a positive impact. And I would just say to you, I don't know how to say this, but I'm pretty sure right now, adjusted for dollars today, kind of did some checking. One, the space program probably cost about more, but not a whole lot more, maybe, than the Marshall Plan did. Okay? And did a lot of good. I would say that right now, what we've spent in a war in Afghanistan for about the same amount of time that we were in a space race is actually higher, adjusted for inflation for today. And I think it passed that maybe a year or two or three ago. And none of that includes the human cost of that one. So, yeah, you can talk about what it costs. I can show you all the positive things that it did for our society while it was happening. I'm not sure I can show you all the positive. I know I can show you all the positive things the Marshall Plan did. There are some positive things, of course, that you know, the war in Afghanistan was enacted to take on. I'm not sure for all those years that you can compare those. So there are social issues, and there always will be. But think about this. A man mobilized this entire country on an almost military, patriotic quest to reach the moon. In doing so, he created the society in the world that reached for the stars, literally, and all the positives that came with that.
That was local historian Russ Gifford. We talked about the amazing technological and cultural changes wrought by the space program and the moon landing, and we shared some memories about watching that landing on TV live 50 years ago. You're listening to The Exchange. I'm Mary Hartnett. Well, we have been talking a lot today about the anniversary of the first man on the moon 50 years ago this week. However, there is another more haunting air travel anniversary this week for Soonlanders. On July 19, 1989, 296 people were on board Flight 232 when it crashed at the Sioux Gateway Airport. 185 people survived because of the work of the flight crew and pilot Al Haynes. The response by rescue crews in Sioux City received worldwide attention, as well as getting an outpouring of support from the community. Mayor Bob Scott reflected on that day with Siouxland Public Media's Sheila Brummer.
We're coming up on the 30th anniversary. What kind of insight would you like to share with people about that day?
Well, you know, I tell people I remember that day. I was going to, I had gone to Omaha, and I came back that afternoon and saw like 50 ambulances parked out on the interstate. And of course, I'd been gone all day and didn't realize that there was a tragedy about to happen because they kept the ambulances out there because they couldn't bring them on until the plane actually landed. And so then I turned the radio on right away and learned that there was probably going to be a plane crash in our community, which was kind of unsettling, to tell you the truth.
You were on the city council at the time, and the outpouring of support from Sioux City, people still talk about it today.
Well, I mean, our citizens did what they always do, and that's come to the aid of their fellow man. And that day in particular, it was a day where you could be very proud if you were an elected official in this community, because our citizens showed up and did what needed to be done and tried to comfort. And they did it not only that day, but they did it in the weeks after that, tried to comfort families and do those sort of things that we do really well here in this community. So, but it was still, I mean, you know, not having anybody be involved in it, still you were sad just because there was that kind of loss in our community.
And it's still shocking that people actually survived if you look at the aftermath of what happened.
Yeah, I flew over the next day in a helicopter, and to believe that, you know, that many people survived and that kind of carnage was just difficult to understand. So, I mean, our first responders had to do a great job that particular day just because of the way that thing crashed and, you know, the separated and all that sort of stuff. And you know, fortunately we were close to hospitals and our hospitals were set up to handle that kind of thing. So it was just Sioux City at its best.
Can you believe it's been 30 years?
Well, yeah, because I remember when we had the 25th, most of the people at that particular point in time that were involved in the crash said that, you know, that they appreciated everything we did, but that was probably the last time they wanted to have a remembrance. And so we want to honor that. And yeah, I can believe it because I'm getting older, Sheila, so unfortunately I do remember it. And I can believe it's 30 years because it's been quite a while now. You know, but we're still well known for it, you know, I mean, because people understand that this community does do the things they need to do.
Anything else you think we need to know? Do you still keep in contact with anyone from back then, or
no.
It's been kind of a...
Yeah, no. You know, I know some, like, the people that were actually involved in the rescue do, but I don't. The only thing I really did that particular point was there was a man and wife that lost their daughter, and so Karen and I kind of hauled them around and that, but not really. No, we've not kept track of anybody. And I think, you know, those people that after 25 years in particular, I think they just want to move on. And I think that's the right decision, quite frankly. I mean, I want to honor their requests and that, but I don't think that we'll probably ever have a lot of contact with those people going forward.
That was Siouxland Public Media Sheila Brummer talking with Mayor Bob Scott about the day Flight 232 crash-landed at the Sioux Gateway Airport 30 years ago this week. And be sure to join us this Friday for The Exchange at 10 a.m. when we will have more details and remembrances of those heroic efforts in the aftermath of Flight 232. listening to The Exchange. I'm Mary Hartnett. Well, it is the middle of July, the middle of summer, and a big attraction around Siouxland is Arnold's Park. Siouxland Public Media's Sheila Brummer recently traveled to the hotspot full of memories spanning geography and generations as well.
For 130 years, Arnold's Park Amusement Park serves up a summer of fun. From the historic wooden roller coaster called The Legend to the log ride and midway games.
We have number one, number three, and number seven.
I have my three grandkids with me and my daughter.
Joan Nagin visits with her family from Windom, Minnesota.
They got the rides closed for ride for the kids to ride on and benches for you to sit on.
Grandma needs a spot to occasionally rest as she tries to keep up with a lively group.
Olivia is five. Kaysen and Eleanor are both 3 years old. They're twins.
And they enjoy this, don't they?
Yep, they do.
This amusement park pastime started when Joan Nagin was young herself.
We used to come down here once a year and stay in a cabin down here and then spend about a week and come down to the park. And then we come down here for our class trip when I was in school in 1969 when I graduated.
And how old were you when you first came to this park?
Oh, probably eight that I remember.
It's been here a long time, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has.
What are some of the things that you remember from back in the day when you were 8 years old going to this park?
The roller skating ring, a lot more rides. It was a lot bigger than this. The trampolines that were in the ground, wild mouse, the octopus, the roller coaster.
And the roller coaster is still here, isn't it?
Yeah, the roller coaster is still here, yeah.
And they're actually bringing back the mouse ride.
That's kind of cool. When you're up on top, it had these sharp curves that it kept going around before you went back down. And it was kind of scary when it took these real sharp curves around.
You either loved it or you hated it. It's kind of a thrill ride.
Marketing director of the park, Paul Plum, says the Wild Mouse isn't the only new attraction. Another opens
right now,
in August.
Putting the finishing touches on this roof garden project here. 13 booths on the street side of the facility. Kind of reminiscent of the old roof garden. And then also putting up the trim work.
Joan Nagin says she remembers the popularity of the roof garden when she was a teen.
I had some friends of mine that had gone to shows there that their parents would let them go down to them.
So I take it your parents wouldn't allow you to go to shows at the roof garden. Is that true?
Yep. Yeah, I don't know why. They just didn't want us driving that far.
Far away did you live?
I lived at Tracy, so that was probably a little over an hour drive.
Actually, an hour is a short trip, considering some employees come from thousands of miles away.
My name is Asia Jerimova, and I'm from Russia. It's hard to pronounce even in Russia.
The 19-year-old is one of 60 students from more than a half dozen countries working this season.
But it's also so fun. I like talking to kids.
Ashiad runs the carousel.
My granddaughter needs help getting on over there. Can you help her?
Yeah, of course.
It's our opportunity to come to America, learn the English language a little better, also just learn our culture a little better.
Marketing director Paul Plum says a special visa program helps ease a shortage of employees.
Our culture is improved by learning their culture. It just ends up being a learning experience for everyone.
What's been your most favorite ride so far? The fishies?
As a day of discoveries for Joan Nagin, her daughter, and grandchildren winds down,
having a good day.
They leave with moments that should last a lifetime or even longer.
You're passing on your family tradition, aren't you?
Yep.
In Arnold's Park, Iowa, for Siouxland Public Media News, I'm Sheila Brummer.
This is The Exchange on Siouxland Public Media. This week, we've been focusing on two commemorations, the July 20th, 1969 moon landing and the crash of Flight 232 at the Sioux Gateway Airport on July 18th, 1989. Be sure to join us this Friday morning at 10 a.m. for The Exchange when we look forward to the Saturday moon landing anniversary and look back at the plane crash 30 years ago. And how heroic efforts by many Siouxlanders made the difference between life and death for many passengers on that plane. We'll have a report from this week's History at High Noon that's coming up Thursday at 12:05 at the Sioux City Public Museum. Presenter Matt Anderson, curator of history, will take a look back at July 19, 1989, when United Airlines Flight 232, an airliner carrying 296 passengers and crew, crash-landed at the Sioux Gateway Airport. And that is coming up tomorrow live at the Sioux City Public Museum, but we'll have a wrap-up on that on Friday morning show as well. Thanks to Sheila Brummer and the girls of Girls Inc. for their help with the show this week. We'll talk to you on Friday. I'm Mary Hartnett. Thanks for listening.